next time.
I'm K2 Romeo, India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And it's time to begin sick night. As it's done for 35 or so years. The main purpose of the sick kind of haven't heard of it before, is education. The curious radio amateurs who want to know more about radio and wireless equipment gather at this time and they educate each other, they teach each other what they've learned on this fairly complicated subject. Arguably, the most educational hobby you can choose is ham radio. There's 25 or 26 different kinds of ham radio. Two-meter FM repeater ham radio, the one you're listening to right now, is just one of the kinds. And if your exposure to ham radio disappoints you, before you give up the hobby, try one of the other 25 kinds. The person signs into the TechNet because he does have a question or a comment by giving us your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. At the beginning of the TechNet, let me drop the phone. The first section of the TechNet is the question and answers. And the second section is the space report run by Paul WS2N. And tonight Paul will be giving a space report number 258 on the series that began quite a few years ago. So, once again, if you've got a question or a comment, please give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, and try to, in between each transmission, wait long enough before you squeeze the mic to hear the three beeps so the machine doesn't time out. K2RIW listening for a check-in.
And to you, Dick, with a comment.
W2RIY, Joe.
Yes.
So far we have Rich and Joe to sign in. Anyone else to have a question or comment, please give me your call letters and name right now.
WS2N, Paul with a space report and a comment.
Okay, you're on the list for the first person to check in that has a question or a comment. One more call. Anyone with a question or comment who wants to sign into the TechNet, give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW to be listening.
KD2NOU, here is Ben, Bravo, Echo, November.
Okay, Ben, Kilo, Delta 2, and give me the three letters again, a little bit slower. Phonetically, go ahead.
November, Oscar, Uniform.
November, Oscar, Uniform. Okay, Ben. And one more call. Anyone with a check-in, give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW to be listening. We probably have more than enough to get going, so Rich, go right ahead with your comment. N2EO, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
Okay, sir. You remember last week I told you about the antenna I'm using on 2 and 440 worked on two, but was a stone on 440. I checked it the next day. Apparently, as it dried out, the only thing I can think of, it started to work properly on 440. What is your take on that? I don't think the feed line itself was wet, because if it was, it would take a lot longer than that to dry out. Do you think there's a wet connector with the antenna? Do you think the antenna itself got wet? And kind of thing like that. Would an MFJ antenna have analyzed the help? Back to that.
Rich, at the tail end of the TechNet last week, I heard you signing in to the 449-125 repeater. and you sounded good. You were making QSOs at that time. So you didn't have to wait a day for something to dry out. This at the tail end of the TechNet last week, 449 was working. So, don't know. I don't have any good explanation for intermittent new experience there, Rich. Yeah, sometimes a loose connector. I think we were suggesting that you connect and disconnect various things to see if anything made a change, but I don't think you had a chance to make any changes before you went to 449 last week and came through beautifully. Over to you, Rich, and to EO, K2RIW.
Yes, that's correct. Right now is just QEF.
Hey, you're sort of asking what can create an intermittent. There's only an infinite number of things that can do that. I guess you're asking what's the more typical ones. The connector not properly seated. Sometimes, particularly with a type N connector, it's possible for the center pin to retract itself inside the connector and stop making contact at one end or the other of the transmission line. But I guess the best you can do is wait until it happens again and then try various divide and conquer techniques. In other words, feed another rig into that exact antenna or connect and disconnect various objects you've got. That's all I can suggest. Let's see if anyone else has any suggestions for you, Rich. N2EO to take it with a delay. K2RIW will be listening for anyone with suggestions on intermittent Zebra and N2. Now, it looks like we've got no good guesses on this one, Rich. There's a large number of things that can do it. Hey, dude. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I just walked into the middle of this. Why don't you fill me in?
Yeah, last week Rich was saying that his antenna on his dual band rig worked beautifully in 2 meters, but it was absolutely dead as a doornail on 440. And at the tail end of the technet, when he was reporting that to us, we asked him to make a transmission on a 449 repeater. He did and came through beautifully. So earlier in the day, it's a bit of a mystery as to why 440 was dead on his particular antenna setup. K2EJ, K2RIW. Any guesses, Eric? We know this is a tough one.
No, I'm going to ask the stupid questions. Has he tried a different radio?
Yeah, I don't think he had the ability to put another radio into that particular antenna. Let's see what Rich is going to say on that. N2EO, K2RIW.
Oh, I did something.
Yeah, the best thing in the world would be to have even a handy talkie you can plug into that antenna. And if the handy talkie is working and the regular rig is not, then that gives you a pretty strong clue that maybe there's something funny going on with the regular rig. But he didn't have a spare rig, Eric. K2EJ, K2RIW.
No, I understand he has a DMR radio. Is this the radio that we're talking about, or are we talking about an analog radio?
I've got it, Rich.
Analog.
And so, was there any way you could have connected the DMR radio to that antenna? And I think the answer you said last week is that you didn't have the adapter. There was a difference in connectors. Is that true, Rich?
Hello, Dick. I could have thrown the DMR radio into the analog mode. Very confusing, the whole thing.
Okay. Did you have the ability to use the DMR radio in the analog mode and to connect it to the antenna that you were suspicious of? Did you have the ability to do that last week, Rich? Go ahead.
Yes, I did, but I didn't do it. The whole thing is strange.
Yeah, if that condition repeats itself, that's one good thing to try. K2EJ, for any other comments? K2IW, you got it, Eric.
K2RW, K2J. The only thing I would suggest is you're going to use the DMR radio. To use it in the analog mode. There's a lot of funny things going on with DMR at the moment, so I wouldn't take that as a reliable thing. But if you heard him on 449-125, he didn't hear you, sound like the radio.
I'm pretty sure he was hearing us. And the non-operation last week, dear Rich, were you non-operational in the analog mode or non-operational in the DMR mode? Over to you, Rich, K2EJ, and 2EO, I'm trying to say, and 2EO, K2RW.
Ozick, we communicated on 449-125, but you awake.
This is N2MB. It's my belief that the center pin at the bottom of the coax by the radio pulled back because the coax got cooler and it shrank. That's my feeling.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guess, Barry. Has anyone ever opened up that particular connector and looked at that center pin to see if it is retracted? N2 Moonbound, K2IW.
Haven't done it recently, but that is my next step. Whether it goes bad or not, I'm planning on going out to Richie's house, taking the connector off of both ends, looking at the center pin and putting it back. I'll bet you anything that one end of that would disconnect, probably at the antenna. That's my best guess, because 2 meters is kind of working, but not 100%. You know.
I'll add this. It's an end connector. Sometimes they don't get put on right, and the center pin is a little bit too short and doesn't quite make contact. So if you transmit, it gets out, and if you get a real strong signal, it gets there.
My feeling.
Okay, that's a pretty good guess. When you set up 449-125, I was weak. There's multiple ways I was weak. Audio was low. Were you hearing a lot of hiss in the background on the signal as if there was not enough RF? You said the 449 was weak. What do you mean by that, Rich? N2EO, K2IW.
Okay, the signal was weak. I was copying him, but the signal was weak.
When you say the signal was weak, were you hearing hiss alongside of the signal? Is that what you mean? Weak on carrier or weak on audio?
Is it weaker on 2 meters also?
No, it's not. Only weak on 440 in carrier.
Does that mean you were hearing a lot of hiss and picket fencing, so to speak, on 440? Is that what you're saying, Rich?
I didn't hear picket fencing, but a lot of hiss.
Okay. Have you since then... Yeah, you did say the next day everything was all right. Just we have to wait until it comes back again. And since you do have a second radio, your DMR radio, which in the analog mode you can connect it to that antenna, that would be a very good thing to try, Rich. That way you're bypassing the radio itself. And if the analog DMR radio works well, and your desktop radio doesn't work so well, that gives you a strong clue. N2EO for any other comments, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Oh, I agree, Dick. The whole thing is very strange. Listen, on another subject, I'll keep it short. I'm going to be in the hospital, probably toward the middle of this week. So if anyone wants to contact me, I love phone calls, I love visits, talk to Rich, KNB, and I'll give you my phone number.
Okay, good luck with that procedure, Rich. The particular hospital you're going to is which hospital or what town? Go ahead, Rich.
If I should have mentioned, Plainview Hospital.
Okay, we know where you got to be. Good luck with all that.
Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y. Go easy with us. And how are those electrons treating you this week, Rich? W-H-O-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W, is it talking there?
Hi there, Dick. Well, sir, Paul has a comment. Let Paul jump ahead of me, because he can probably be fairly quick with his comments, and then if my subject ends up being a little more detailed in length as far as discussion and analyzing or whatever, let it be, okay? So Paul can jump ahead.
And when we do pass it back to you, Joe, know that your signal was a little bit weak that time. So just in the background, you were 90% audio and 10% hiss, so to speak. WS2N with a comment. K2RIW. Go ahead, Paul.
This is WS2N, and I just want to bring up the topic we've talked about many times before. The water meters in buildings and homes sometimes lacking the ground between the pipes in your house and the pipes leading from the street. You know, they have a water meter that has been made for Suffolk County that they're changing everybody's meters out. They did mine last week. So, you know, what they're doing is they're switching from your regular meter system to an RF system, you know, where the truck rides down the street. He'll send out a signal. He'll be able to read your meter directly. You know, each meter has its own lithium-ion battery in it, which supposedly is like 10 years. But, you know, in a conversation I had with the guy that showed up, let me drop it. I asked him, you know, as he was doing this, I said, you know, did you ever get a briefing on putting a jumper cable between the systems? And by the way, I have a braided cable between, you know, my existing house system and coming out of the main. But I asked him if he had briefed on that. He never heard of it. So, you know, they got these guys going around and installing these things. And he did tell me one time, he said, you know, a couple of times he's been outdoors, you know, people have bulbs. Some people have bulbs for these meters. You know, it'd be like laying in the wet grass or something, and he's reaching down with a wrench or something. He'll get zapped, you know, and he'll think twice about it. And but he, you know, he had no idea about this, so now he's going to think about it a little bit more. You know, he's running. You know, any kind of a jumper between the two before you do it, but they're not told to do that. So I thought that was interesting. Back to you, Dick. WS1.
Yeah, to be up to code, your house is supposed to have a grounding between your fuse box and a real ground wire outside the house buried in the ground. A real grounding pipe, so to speak. Grounding rod. But there's many a house built, let me say, in the late 50s, where the grounding goes to the copper water pipe, and that's it. And if you open up that copper water pipe to replace the main valve coming into the house or the water meter or anything else, if you disconnect that pipe between you and the main out in front of your house, there is a slim possibility of a huge amount of voltage appearing there because of the lack of the grounding of your particular pole peg transformer, the dropping transformer that's on your utility pole that feeds the 220 line into your house. It's supposed to have its own separate ground from that transformer on top of the pole to the butt plate at the bottom of the utility pole. A copper plate, I believe it is. And I think it's fed with something like an 8-gauge or a 6-gauge piece of wire. Well, sometimes the utility pole can be dropped. Sometimes the utility pole has been struck with a car, or sometimes somebody has stolen that piece of copper wire and sold it to scrap. And so, with the lacking of grounding of the transformer that feeds your house, in many cases, the grounding of the transformer is taking place by way of the grounding lead that feeds your house from that transformer to your fuse box. See, if say, for instance, your main distribution down your block is a 13 kilovolt line, three phases of A, B, and C phase, and one of those phases, one single wire, goes to the high voltage terminal on your transformer, which steps the 13 kilovolts down to a 240 with cenotaph, 120 each side. And so there's only one wire on that high voltage side, and the grounding of the transformer completes the circuit. And it could be that your house is completing the circuit, if you know what I mean, in which case the water pipe is really doing all the grounding. And if somebody opens that water pipe to replace the valve or replace the meter, there's a lot of risk involved. And so it's amazing to me that this guy replacing those meters hasn't been giving that instruction. And run that by again, Paul. Did you say that sometimes he reaches into the vault with a wrench and he has felt a voltage and he didn't know what was going on and he hadn't been instructed to run a grounding strap between the two chunks of pipe that he's about to open up? A jumper cable. He wasn't instructed to do that, and he didn't know why he was sensing voltage. WS2N, K2RIW, go ahead, Paul. What did he tell you that he felt?
Well, he felt a shock, and it's happened a number of times, but not indoors, you know, mine's indoors in the basement. But the only time he's come across a problem is outdoors. I remember laying in like damp grass, trying to reach down into the vault, and he'll touch something, and that will light him up. But then he'll just shift around, he'll sit differently, and he'll grab his channel lock. He feels the handles are insulated, and he'll just use that. That's good enough. But I think this guy's a young fella. I think he's gonna think about this. I don't know if he's gonna ask somebody about it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he starts bringing big alligator clips or something from the, from somewhere and just, putting them on the, on his thing before he does it. So, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe by telling him something like this, maybe this guy's got, his life got saved somewhere down the line. I was thinking, suppose you have a bad ground in your house, a piece of equipment, a piece of something when you wash it, dry it, something right in front of your house. Not properly going back to neutral and having this thing going back to the ground and having a bad ground outside. Now, you could have something running in your house and then having that electricity run right through that meter location as well. You don't need that big transformer outside your house to zap you back either.
If he's repeating replacing a water meter outdoors in the outdoors vault is some distance from the house, at least a section of pipe from the house to that vault was in the ground, giving up some amount of grounding, and therefore the total amount of voltage left on that pipe hopefully is much, much smaller. However, the really dangerous condition is when you're replacing a main valve or water meter inside the house. Now the chunk of pipe connected to the house and the chunk of pipe going out to the street are thoroughly separate devices. And if with that meter or valve removed and you put one hand on each side, in theory, a good fraction of 13 kilovolts can appear across your two hands. So the most dangerous condition, as I see it, is opening up that pipe inside the house without having a great big jumper cable connecting those two pieces of pipe electronically before you open them up. So I think you're telling me he sometimes replaces a meter inside the house, in which case there's a huge amount of risk if he doesn't realize what could potentially happen. Up till now, maybe each one of the houses where he's done that work, luckily there was proper grounding right at the utility pole, if you know what I mean. WS2N, K2RIW.
Yes.
Who is that?
Hey, E2J.
Go ahead,
Yeah, well, let me tell you, the houses that we were in Astoria, my house and my sister's house, the electrical neutral is connected to the ground pipe. And the ground pipe is actually before the meter. So the electrical ground is before the meter, so if you disconnect the meter, you're not going to get any current flow through the meter, unless, of course, there's something further on in the house that's using the pipes. And on the island here, it's becoming a different situation because a lot of water pipes are being replaced, and they're being replaced with tanks, so that's a whole different game. K2RIWK2J.
Now, you have a mental picture of that wiring in your house that you're talking about in Astoria, but the words you use were ambiguous. You said the grounding of the fuse panel was before the meter. What does before mean?
That means the pipe coming out of the wall is where it's getting grounded. The pipe coming out of the wall then goes to the water meter, which then goes to the rest of the house.
Okay, so before the meter means in the direction the water is flowing, before the meter. So it was the street side is where the grounding takes, is what you're saying. Yeah, some people would hear those words and think that, so it was a piece of wire doing grounding from the fuse panel can either go to the nearest water pipe or the long distance on the far side of the meter. So say it was on the near side, could with those ambiguous words be misunderstood?
Okay. Yeah, on the city, typically they tend to have the fuse box or circuit breaker panel in the same place where the water comes in, because they tend to bring it in underground, unless, of course, you've got a system which is overhead, which is not that often.
In my particular house, the fuse panel is on the north wall of the house. The water comes into the house much closer to the south wall of the house. So there is about a 30-foot distance between my fuse panel and the place where the main water pipe from the street comes in. In my particular case, the grounding is on the so-called near side. The grounding is on the non-street side in my case. Therefore, anybody opening up my pipe would better be using a jumper cable if he wants to be on the safe side. So, do you believe the guy you were talking to, Paul, understood the way the wiring of the pole pick transformer took place? Does he have a slight understanding of how extremely high voltage could appear across that pipe? WS2N, K2LIW.
I didn't talk about the pole pick transformer at all. You know, I just the grounding within the house itself. You know, for instance, I have a ground that comes in by the electric meter. So the house itself is grounded with ground rods. And then right at the meter, there's this jumper cable that goes from the piping system from the house side past the water meter and into the main coming from the street. So, you know, I can tell he had no idea. They were not trained on this problem at all. So then, looking at my system, he goes, he sort of braided wire. He goes, oh, maybe that's what this is for. So, that told me a lot. So, maybe the guy will think about it and be a little bit more careful in the future. Maybe I'll ask some questions back to you, Dick.
It sure sounds like there's a huge error taking place in that company that hired him. I wonder if that was a subcontractor hired by the water department, so to speak. And it sure sounds like he was not given proper instruction at all. That's potentially a lethal condition as I see it. Roughly how old do you think this guy was, Paul? And do you believe he was a subcontractor, or do you think he was a direct employee of the water department? Over to you, Paul.
Well, Suffolk County Water sent this out to a company, and The company's a worldwide, company, doing all kinds of maintenance around the world. It's not a fly-by-night op, it's a worldwide company. He's in his probably late 20s, that age category. You know, he's all going in and out, change his thing out, he's in and out 15, 20 minutes. Chasing, you know, just next to the main bracket, you know, the security bracket, and then the unions that are involved. Reattaches the new meter. He's got a electronic gizmo that he programs each individual meter, you know, with the number and all. And this way, in the future, when they ride by, they'll be able to read the meter. I won't have to call the meter reading in anymore. Back to you, Dick.
Man, Dick, I'll tell you what's going on.
Some unidentified person shouted something at us. We'll go over to you in a second. Paul, even though it's a major company, you've got strong evidence that an employee of that company was not properly educated on this lethal, potentially lethal condition. Paul, I think somebody should go back to that company and tell them about the fact that their employees out there doing this replacement are doing something that's extremely dangerous without proper knowledge. And there's really need to correct that, because you and I right now don't know how many employees out there are doing this without proper instruction. So somebody should tell that company what's going on here, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW.
I think this guy might say something. He's going to ask some questions. I can tell he doesn't want to get zapped again. He thought about it. You know, so that's probably the way that will go. Not sure. I don't want to name the company. I don't like doing that. Back to you there.
Okay, the person who said he's got some further information, the voice sounded a little bit like Vito to be to PJF, but I could be wrong. Person, identify yourself, and then go ahead with your information. K2RIW, the tech man.
Good evening, Dick. This is Kilo 2, Golf Juliet Echo. I'll name the company. It's Asplunk. They hired a bunch of young fellas. They're neither electricians or plumbers, and they train them how to train meters. This is an accident waiting to happen. Over.
What do you believe is the right correction for that?
Suffolk County Water evidently used Asplunk as the low bidder. If someone wants to call Asplunk, that's the one that's doing the work. Over.
Paul, did Ed have the right to get sent to the company and ask me like a corrective action should be applied here? WS2N, K2IW.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to name the company, but I think he's 99.99% right.
Ed, what do you believe is the right corrective action to make sure that all of the employees doing this work, potentially lethal work, get proper instruction? There's some huge error way back in the chain of command at that company that's not properly instructing these people. K2GJE, K2LAW, what do you suggest, Ed?
K2RIW, K2GJE. I think you'd probably have difficulty maybe contacting Asplunk. It's very easy to contact the Suffolk County Water Authority and let them know this is an accident waiting to happen. Not every fuse panel or circuit breaker panel is connected to the street side of the water meter. There are places where the water meter is in a pit, so when the ground connection for electrical purposes is made inside the house or inside the factory, it's not on the street side of that water meter, and this current flowing If you have one of the dryers that were installed years ago, they allowed you to use the neutral as a return for the motor, and the heater was across the 220, but they allowed you to use the neutral. There's current on the neutral. There's current on the ground. This is an accident waiting to happen. I assume usually there's more than one house connected to a pole pig, and the pole pig gets some grounds that way if the butt plate is not connected to the transformer. But this is just an accident waiting to happen. Over.
It sure is. The house across the street from me, I'm not sure, but because it's near a corner, he might be the only person on that particular pole pig transformer. And about 20 years ago, an automobile struck that telephone pole, and the net result is that the 13 kilovolts appeared at his fuse panel and charred the fuse panel, and had to be replaced. He is extremely lucky, in my opinion, that that didn't create a fire in the house and burn his house down. So, proper grounding of that transformer, because only one lead goes to its primary. And the grounding of the transformer provides the second lead for the primary. So quite often the private home is providing that grounding. In which case, I guess a person who puts a clamp-on ammeter on the neutral wire going out to the street, I think you get a pretty strong clue as to what's going on. I wonder if anyone has ever done that. Put a clamp-on ammeter on just that neutral wire going out to the street. And if you see any substantial amount of current flowing in that wire, it's a pretty strong clue that something is not proper somewhere. Anybody have any comments on this one? K2LIW and the TechNet.
K2LIW, I just looked up electrician via water meter. The, what's it called? The SafetySolutions.net has a... they say you should cut the prison conductor with a 70 amp or greater current rating to expand the work area, where the metal pipe is to be cut, the meter disconnected, and blah, blah, blah. But in my world, when we run into something like that, we don't call the town, we don't call the company, we call OSHA, and OSHA actually does things real quick. Yeah. It's Roy W. K. to a J.
Yeah, you got a good point there, Eric. If you call the company, they would be afraid to admit that something improper had taken place. Therefore, they would guess you to death. So it looks like somebody should be informing OSHA about this condition, that people are out there doing these replacements under potentially lethal conditions. So somebody's got to lean on that company. We're going to go over to Joe now, to B2RYY. K2RYW, go ahead, Joe.
Okay, good evening. We're just taking plenty of time for the beep to go by, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm working on a Motorola repeater, GR500, putting it on a hand band for somebody. And the exact frequencies aren't important, but say it's operating on 444 and receive 449 transmit for enumeration, 5 megs apart. This type of repeater has a power supply in it, two radios, two mobile radios. This is how it's made up, and a very small controller called a RIC, which is simply an interface between one to the other to give you audio and COS activity to be able to key the radio to either the transmitter when the receiver sees activity. Yeah, but that's really not part of the problem. The repeater is using a small mobile duplexer made for this particular application. It's made by Solway, but it's actually made to fit inside this cabinet. The duplexer itself has a rating of about 85 to 90 dB of isolation, TX to RX port, both ways. Not only duplexer, the cables in the that are being used are double shielded cables, RZ142 with proper termination on the end of the cable, no adapters. And how I measured the isolation was first setting the duplexer up on a service monitor. That's a break. And that verified and told me that tuning up the duplexer with the proper shielded cable, I think it's using actually a quarter inch superflex which is better shielding than the double shielded cables. Shoot the thing up with 6 dB pads on each port of the duplexer. And termination. So the duplex is tuned up properly, it's tuned up with a tracking generator on a service monitor, and I got the notches to be exactly what it's supposed to be. So here's the thing. To check the final operation of the thing, each radio is programmed initially with just one frequency of operation. Transmits on one, and the other radio receives on another. What I did was program each radio to receive on the opposite frequency only. No transmit, just receive. The transmit radio would receive on, say, 444, and the receive radio would also be able to receive on 449. So I put a signal in from the antenna input and measured the apparent loss going to the duplexer, looking at the notch depth, and the notch depth did agree with what I saw in the receiver of about 85, maybe 87, almost 90 dB of isolation, maybe a little more than that. Here's the funny thing, and this is the part of the question. As you put your hand near the shielded cables, the apparent shielding, there's something different that changes, and apparently what happens is... Yeah, I just reset my TOT. What happens is you can actually hear the notching effect change. It gets sometimes less and sometimes more as you move your hands around. The cables are supposed to be of good quality. They're using crimp connectors on them. And I don't know of any other way to check these things, really, to check the isolation loss. RG-142 is rated for something like 90 dB of isolation from the outside of the cable to the inside of the cable. Something similar to other ones that are manufacturers call like LMR-195, which uses foil and a outside shield. So it's very similar in construction, except it's just simply double shielded cable with Teflon center. It's a Teflon jacket inside and a solid center conductor. So what do you think's going on here, Dick? K2RIWS, WH4YY, back to you.
Hey, I've got to guess what's happening. And you're suspicious that the shielding of the cable was improper. I think there's something more going on here.
I got it, man.
There's many a person who has taken something like a Hewlett-Packard 608 signal generator in the old days, properly warmed up so that it's not drifting, and because the dial on the front panel goes down to minus 110, and they're trying to measure sensitivity of minus 120, they put an extra 20 dB pad after the signal generator and then go into the receiver to try to measure sensitivity. Because the box that the Hewlett-Packard 608 is contained in, and it's got an oscillator inside running at something like plus 10 or plus 15 dBm, the leakage of the cabinet of the signal generator was walking around the whole environment and getting into the receiver. And so what a number of people have done to solve the problem is the so-called New England technique. They put the signal generator in the backyard with a long piece of cable going into the receiver that's in the shack, and have somebody remotely operate the signal generator. In your case, your service monitor is like that 608 signal generator. Your service monitor maybe only has 90 dB of shielding of its case. Therefore, its internal oscillator could be leaking out, and as you move around, you're a reflecting object in that environment. Let's see what Eric's got to say. KE2EJ, K2RIW, go ahead, Eric.
KE2RIW, K2EJ. That was also number one. That's number two. All the cavities themselves, properly grounded to each other. I don't know what kind of duplex he's using. But you absolutely got to make sure that there's a good electrical connection between the cages of the cavity. That's number two. Some of the smaller, low-power duplexers actually have little straps that go between the screws. That's one thing. Answer number three, on the tuning stubs themselves, is some of them have, it depends upon what frequency, what type, some of them have capacitors that operate as a notch, some of them don't. They come with a little metal cover, and sometimes they get lost because they're a little small, so any change of inductance around the cans makes the thing move. And number four is the actual tuning stubs and their locking nuts, and making sure that they're clean and they're tight so they make a good electrical connection.
And I've run into all of those cases and even a few more that are funny, but that's my take. And the other thing is that he's got, I don't know what his service monitor is, but if it's like an IFR 1200, ain't no way ever he's going to measure the 90 degree of isolation with that thing. KQRWK to the check.
Give us a couple of words on that. That service monitor, what do you believe its approximate amount of shielding in this case, Eric?
Oh, if it's an IFR, they actually have in their specifications, a rating of how much it radiates. It radiates a little bit, but it's really, really tiny. And it's really good about it. So, I tend not to blame the service monitor for things like that. I tend to look for other things, but there's been a case where the leakage was just enough. We were working on a system that you wanted to really get down to the bottom, because the service monitor, even with the receiver input, could barely hear it. But we were using some other gear at that time, and we used the New England method, and that worked out very well.
You've got it, Joe. W2LYY, KQRIW, into the deep.
Okay, service monitor's an IFR 1500, and since you don't know how to construct it in SciTech, I'll give you an idea of how to construct it. All the coax piping inside the service monitor does not use shielded cable. It uses what's called a semi-rigid line between all the modules. Anything that's critical, like that between the output attenuator and so forth, all that stuff is using semi-rigid line, which is like miniature hard line with SMA connectors on it. They're all tight. I previously checked the service monitor in the tracking mode or in the duplex mode, and you can put an attenuator pad on the output of the service monitor, put an attenuator on the input to the spectrum analyzer, turn the thing up to full blast, like in the duplex mode, and you cannot see yourself. So it's not being internally generated from the signal generator back to itself. That's not where it's coming from. And I was going to say, even if I put the New England method in, it still told me the same thing, then what would you have to say? Then you're taking the service monitor pretty much out of the picture.
Yeah, Eric did give you a number of other suggestions. So there's something else that's bothering me here, and that is the transmitter of your repeater. If it was running 50 watts, I'm just using that as a number, that's plus 47 dBm. If your particular duplexer has 85, let's give it 87 dB of isolation. 87 dB down from plus 47 is minus 40, if I get the numbers right. So in other words, the leakage signal from the transmitter getting into the receiver could be minus 40. And a minus 40 signal, particularly if there's a preamp involved on that receiver of the duplexer, could be enough signal on the frequency of 600 KCOA or 5 megacycles away if it's 450. A minus 40 signal could be creating some desensitization. So only 87 dB of isolation of a duplexer, in some cases, I think is not enough, Joe. The B2RYY, KQRIW in the tech net.
Well, initially I said it's a mobile duplexer, so the mobile duplexer is rated for something like 85 to 90. I think I'm actually getting a reading of 90, maybe slightly better initially. But as I said, as you put your hands between the cables, this apparently you can actually see the signal go up and down levels, listening on each alternate receiver. Now, I'm not talking about transmitting. I'll discuss that in a moment later on. This is not either a quick piece of equipment transmitting. This is totally receiving on the opposite frequency, but through the port of the duplex we're supposed to be connected to. A notch duplexer lets everything go through except one frequency, the frequency it's notched for. So the whole world passes through on the transmit frequency or the receive frequency, except the opposite frequency 5 megahertz away. All right? Now, when I'm testing this thing, I'm testing it with a piece of quarter-inch superflex between the service monitor and the antenna connector going to this cabinet itself. The internal cables are all RG142 for proper termination. So here's the second test what I did. Break for reset here.
Can I ask one question before you go on?
Go ahead, Eric.
Sure. And has a mobile duplex with only the tuning screws at the back end, and the other end of the other end has end connectors on it, and all the connecting, what do you want to call it, the connections going into the cans themselves, or little sections, are all semi-rigid cables. So they're not coax cables on the duplexer.
There's one thing that I haven't heard in your description, and I'm sure you have. I'm going to ask anyway. Let's say you're sweeping the receive type cap and you want to put the knock in the right place. You're feeding your signal generator into the antenna port. You're going out of the receive cavity into the spectrum analyzer. What do you do with the other port?
Let it be on terminator like you're supposed to.
Right. I just wanted to know because that can make a huge difference.
Initially, when I tuned up the duplexer, I used 6 dB pairs on the antenna port and the, say, like the transmit port first, and then the receive port had a 50 ohm terminator on it. Then I reversed the procedure. You're supposed to use a 6 dB pair on each side, as Cellwave says in their instructions for tuning all the different types of duplexes, to negate the SWR effect of your cables.
Exactly the right way to do it. Did I tell you how much signal to use?
Well, I use enough to see the bottom and end of the scale. I bring up the signal to about maybe minus 10 with the generator in the tracking mode. That gives me enough dynamic range to be able to see 90 dB away, because you got to remember, the service monitor really only see down to about maybe 100 or so. So you have to put a fairly good-sized signal in, even in the tracking mode, to be able to see the opposite bottom end of what you're talking about.
I'm just checking because there are a bunch of service monitors out there that don't actually provide more than minus 10. That's kind of cutting it close. So, but you're in the right zone there. I just wanted to hear that there was a terminator on the other side.
I'm well aware of how to tune up duplexes. I tune up pass notch, notch only, so forth, pass only, and so forth. I am familiar with how to tune different things up. Now, here's the second test I did, Dick. I used the service monitor as a load, a seal dummy load, not one of these bird dummy loads that you stick on the back of something. So it's fairly shielded fairly well. And I put an RF tap device I have, made by Bird, that can give you up to, you know, an adjustability of like the different attenuator levels between the center pin and device set for 50 dB on UHF between the center pin and the BNC tap. So once I had the center line going to the dummy load, that gave me something to transmit into, and then I took another piece of good shielded cable and ran it between the output of the service monitor and that 50 ohm tap. I had to turn up the generator at least 50 dB or so to be able to, you know, hear the receive signal on the receive, you know, the proper receive frequency on the input side of the system, of the normal working frequency. When I energized the transmitter, I had to increase the service monitor level setting about 10 dB. Once I did that, I put my hand between the cables of the duplex, and I just let the button go to reset. I had to put my hand between the cable to see what kind of effect it had, and sure enough, it changed the descent that it was seeing on the system, and actually got a little better.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
That when you're trying to measure, signal levels going from inside to outside 90 dB, it's very hard to catch it if you got like a bad connector. What do you think about that?
That's you, Dick. Excuse me, Eric Trump said KE2EJ. What do you think, Eric? K2RIW?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't catch all of that, so you take it and I'll listen.
Once again, with well shielded cables going into one of these Motorola, I think it is, coupling devices into a known good dummy load with the main signal going into the dummy load. Again, as he moved his hands around the cable, he would see the sensitivity change. And so it certainly suggests that the signals are in the outside world and the outside of those cables by some means. And when it comes to leakage, the chain is no stronger than the weakest link. I mean, a leakage anywhere on any one of the connectors, on any one of the cables, is going to give you signals crawling along those cables, and it's going to look like everything is leaking, if you know what I mean. So until you solve every one of the leaks, you're not going to get a solution. If there were two leaks in the system, and you perfectly fixed one of them, you would see no improvement. You have to get every one of them. I know that's not much of an answer, but it's a guess. I've seen things like this, so. So, W2RYY, K2RIW, the tech man.
Another point of view.
Go ahead, Eric.
I don't know if the viewers ever taken a VNA to the input of a receiver. And I've seen receivers that are not quite 50 ohms when you look at them. And also the way they have a tendency to make a connection to the relay, to the input and receiver, is not the kind of thing that you see inside your spectrum analyzer or your service monitor, which is done right. So there is an area that you should fix.
Yeah, I'm going to add to that. Any of the connections within the receiver itself, if they're not perfect, you could have a mysterious leakage path. Over to you, Joe. The B2RYY, K2IW. Thanks for the beep.
Well, the radios are identical radios, mobile radios, and I think they're M1225 series radios, so they're basically, they're Memphis type of operation. I've taken those kind of radios apart before, and they have a shielding on one side of the board. The bottom side is looking at the casing of what it's mounted in, and the usually there's a shielding over the PA section by itself. How well the thing is actually shielded, I don't really know about that. The RF section itself on the receiver, as far as the front end coils, as you call it, so to speak, of the front end section, usually has a shield soldered to the circuit board like it does on other sections, like in the BCO. So, I mean, how well this thing is internally shielded all by itself, I don't know. But it's a funny type of thing, noticing that I'm not putting my hands near the radios, I'm just putting it near the cables, and the cables certainly indicate like they're really not operating as well as they should be. So I thought that might be an easy way to check it, but apparently not. I guess the answer might simply be just to get another set of cables made.
It may not be the cables, Joe. It may not be the cables. When you've got signals crawling around on the outside of the system, everything can be suspicious. And how do you isolate the path of the leakage is a real tough one. A sniffing device might help. If on the end of a piece of semi-rigid cable you have a small loop from the center conductor to ground to the shield, and you pour a significant amount of signal into that sniffer, and then hold the sniffer near every one of the cables, every one of the connectors, everywhere, there's a chance you'll be able to find the leakage path. In other words, do it as far as the sniffer is concerned. The sniffer is being used in the transmit mode while you're looking at your normal indicator. That might give you a clue, Rachel. The B2RYY, K2RIW.
I'll have to construct that off one of my spare pieces of double shielded cable. I can prepare the end of it to make up a very small loop to keep the thing contained. Because I know something like using a simple rubber duct may not be adequate to pretty much too much signal all at once, all over the place. And like you said, a small loop, very small loop with enough power being generated may tend to isolate where it's being picked up within the cable itself. I'll give that a try and see what happens. Maybe I'll get back to you next week and let you know what the results are of this thing. But currently, the way the duplex, the whole repeater operates right now, is not very, very efficient with having about 10 dB of descent.
Yeah, the descent, as I see it, is because of only 87 or 90 dB of isolation of the duplexer. I think you need more than that to not have descent. If this is the best of all worlds, you'd like to have 115 dB of isolation in your duplexer. And by the way, when it comes to building that reverse sniffer. A double shielded coax is one approach, but the easiest way to build one of those is on a piece of semi-rigid. The only piece of semi-rigid cable we have to construct a sniffer on the end of that, Joe, go ahead.